Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, y'all, I was like, y'all like going down to the shops, y'all. And like, so, you know, when like you see an adult painfully attempting to speak millennial?
Yeah.
It's that, but like aggressive. What's going on, guys? And welcome back to Watch Time, your weekly deep dive on everything internet and YouTube. And I feel like some weeks we do that intro and then other weeks we just kind of roll right into it.
What's up, guys? I'm Grace and this is my brother, Elliot. Elliot is a big YouTuber if you're new here, and I run Click Management, which is our talent management gaming firm.
Very big, huge YouTuber, giant.
Massive. 9.something million subscribers.
Dropping every day.
We're also brother and sister. I don't know. I feel like some people don't know that, but
there's a lot of dynamics going
There's a lot of dynamics going on.
But today we've got some interesting topics to deep dive into, which is going to be everything from the idea of AI CGI influencers, which is apparently a thing that has come up on my radar this week, which I didn't know about, to a couple of tidbits resolving the hot tub drama that we discussed last week. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think what we're going to open with is the Epic versus Apple lawsuit case has finally concluded.
Yeah. But first of all, Elliot, how has your week been?
My week's been good. It's actually been relatively chill, I'd say. I had a couple
That makes one of us.
Yeah, no, I know. Yours hasn't at all. Well, like not chill as in I've been sitting around doing nothing, but I've just had a lot of like not work things on. Like I've had like birthdays and other things, which has just meant that work's been hectic when I'm at work because I'm trying to cram in getting videos and streams done. But I've also had a lot of time not at work, which is always nice.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
Well, I can't say the same for myself. I feel like, I don't know, the last few weeks have just been bloody mad, but it's also kind of that feeling where you're like moving really fast on stuff. Everything's happening and it feels really good and you're like in the flow and you're loving.
And there's measurable output.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, working hard doesn't feel as hard when you feel like there's output being completely smashed every single time you sit down.
1,000%. Sometimes I think with my job and like the work that we do at Click, which is our talent management firm, and a lot of work we do, we're doing a whole heap of different things, but there is a significant part of the work that we do, which is working with brands on campaigns. And brands will sometimes come to us and they'll be like, hey, we have this campaign, we need to get it live with a talent like in the next like week or two. And that is like super normal for us. And so it's like, you know, you're planning this campaign, you're getting it live, and then you're invoicing it, you're paid, and you're done. And that can all happen very, very quickly. And I feel like it's almost given me like an ADHD with work where I just like expect everything
immediate
to happen
payoff
really fast. But we're trying to do a better job at the moment of like planning for the future and putting things in place, which means we'll have like big long-term pieces of work for like the next year or so. But it just takes a long time to pitch for those sorts of things. And so it's been slightly frustrating over the last few months. We've been just like putting a lot of time into stuff that like hasn't paid off yet. But now we're in this like mental period and I realize I'm sounding really cryptic and I hate it when people are like, oh, I can't talk about whatever, but it all is starting to come together and like definitely
and we will
some of the things,
talk about some of it on the podcast probably in a couple of weeks.
1,000%. One of them we will absolutely be talking about, not next week, but definitely the week after.
Yes.
But it's good and it feels really good. And you know what's exciting is like I realize it's not just the work that I love, but like I fucking love like building this business, you know, and like coming to work right now. The team is so good. Everyone's so excited and it's mental, like it's busy. And yesterday, you know, we had like 6 people in me and Emma's office. Emma's our other co-founder and everyone was like, holy crap, how are we going to get all this done in the next 2 weeks? But it was also like so nice because it was like everyone was together. There was like six of us in the room and we were like, we're going to get this done. We're going to get it done as a team. And I don't know, it's just like such a rewarding environment to come to right now where everyone is like excited about the potential, excited about like the trajectory that we're on and like passionate about what they're doing. And you just can't.
It's good. It's good right now.
It's really
good team,
good vibes.
Good projects, exciting stuff. Good. What's the word? for morale.
Yeah.
Good morale, good vibes, like, good energy.
When you're building a business, it's not always that way. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who started a business maybe like a year ago. I was like, how are you going? Like, how are you feeling? And it was Monday morning and I was really like gassed up to come into work because we had like a lot of exciting things happening. And he was in this phase and he was just like, fuck.
Is this
like,
who I'm thinking of?
Would
be, I reckon.
I mean, Matt?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
We can say his name. And he was just like, dude, it's like one of those periods right now where it's hard and you're like questioning why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And it feels like you're like dragging your feet through mud. There's just issues after issues. Been there, you know, like truly been there.
Yeah.
Like really been there.
Like crying into like a pillow
at
night.
Been there. And there are periods where it's like, it's really hard. But I think it's just like, kind of knowing that those periods will come and they'll come again for us, I have no doubt. But then there are also the periods where you just feel like you're flying and like you've got the right people in the right places and
definitely.
The right kind of work. And it's like, that's my rant for this week. It feels good.
Good productive vibes.
Yeah.
And definitely. I'll tell you who else has been productive. The courts in Epic vs. Apple. What a segue. I'm really working on my segues at the moment.
Amazing.
For those who are unaware, a very, very quick catch up. Basically, over a year ago now, Epic Games decided to basically put something into Fortnite that allowed people to purchase V-Bucks and circumvent the Apple payment system on if you're playing Fortnite on the iPhone. Apple said, no, you must pay your pound of flesh if you wish to exist in our ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So they took Fortnite off the App Store. Epic said, haha, we knew you were going to do that. And now we're suing you. So basically, Epic baited Apple. Apple was always going to do what they were going to do. And Epic had fully pre-planned to sue them to challenge the fact that currently, if you have an iPhone, the only way that developers can put apps on the iPhone is through the App Store. And the App Store takes, I believe, a 30% cut from everything on that.
If you want to hear Elliot and I rant and argue on this, we've been following this for the last month or so.
Yeah, I think it was actually two episodes ago that we talked
more
in depth about this. But anyway, long story short, Epic is basically saying that you can't say that this is the only way that you're allowed to share apps on the iPhone because you're a market and that's being a monopoly. And they're also saying that the cut they take is just obscene. So Apple has obviously responded in court because they make billions and billions with a B from this system.
Billions with a big B.
So Epic is really challenging, like a pretty fundamental part of the whole Apple ecosystem.
The outcome of this, it can't be understated.
Doesn't matter if you don't care about Fortnite.
Doesn't matter if you don't care about
literally,
gaming.
This isn't about Fortnite. Like Fortnite was the thing that started it, but it's kind of like when you get these giant Supreme Court cases that, yeah, it's not about the one case. It's about the precedent that sets for that just echoes through everything. So this would change the entire digital ecosystem. But basically, they've been in court for weeks now, arguing. There have been some pretty hilarious moments in there. For example, at one point showed the Fortnite banana skin and he was wearing a suit. And the Apple lawyer stood up and he said, is that banana always wearing a suit? And they said, no, he also comes in a naked form, but we thought we'd put him in a suit because we're in court. And it just some very weird back and forwards, basically.
That's so funny.
But it brought in everyone. It brought in from Tim Sweeney, who is the kind of founder and majority owner of Epic Games, to Tim Cook, who is the CEO of Apple. Really, like, it shows how high profile this case is, that this is the kind of thing that Tim Sweeney and Tim Cook are fully invested in.
Getting them out of bed in the morning.
Definitely getting them out of bed in the morning. Right now, the arguments have concluded. All the evidence has been submitted. There is now a single judge. They don't have juries in cases like this because I think literally just the amount of knowledge.
Specialized knowledge you need.
It's not like a, did he do it? It's kind of like a much deeper question than that.
Yeah.
So now this one judge sits with that evidence for the next 2 to 3 months, possibly longer. I think in minimum a month, but it could be months with the plural. And then we'll basically come back and deliver a verdict.
Bloody big call.
big call, huge call. And I think it's going to be very interesting. I think right now the prevailing opinion is neither side is going to fully win. The judge isn't going to say, yep, Epic's completely right. Apple, you now need to fully open up your ecosystem to everyone and everything. But they also think they are going to hit Apple with some pretty significant kind of policy changes that require them to restructure the way that they distribute digital apps and allow for a lot more competition. But basically, if you're excited to get Fortnite back on your phone, you might have to hold up because it could still be a few months away, because obviously this has all got to get resolved before that's even going to consider happening. But if you are excited for potentially revolutionary change to the digital games distribution, then stay tuned.
And has Tim been talking about this publicly at all? Both Tims? Tim Sweeney.
So glad you brought this up. I don't believe Tim Cook has quite as much. But what I thought was so funny, I've talked about this in previous episodes, how Tim Sweeney, majority owner of Epic Games,
CEO, founder,
all the big title cards, billionaire with a B, like a
still
big,
likes KFC,
like a big B. Literally, his closing tweet on the final day of the case was like, "Hey guys, like the Apple v. Epic case is now concluded. I'm not going to be commenting publicly on the case until we get a verdict delivered. But I do want to say shout outs to Popeye's Chicken for opening a restaurant across from the courthouse, because that's really got me through the whole process." Literally.
No, did he actually?
Literally tweeted that. Yeah, he was like, shout outs to the Popeye's Chicken that's across the road from the courthouse. Like, actually incredible. And then I think a couple of weeks ago, he bought up another giant area of forest, which once again just signifies that he is the most unconventional and, you know, everyday billionaire that I have ever heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elliot said it before and he would say it again.
We stan
Tim Sweeney.
We do
love Tim.
We do love Tim. That's going to wrap us up on giving you the update on Epic versus Apple. And I think we've also got an update on the big topic of last week's podcast, which was hot tub streamers.
Yeah, we covered this in a fair bit of detail where we really examined what the terms of service look like in an interesting way for a platform.
And to quickly catch people up, if you're not aware, basically, obviously, on Twitch, the biggest live streaming service, you do need to adhere to a certain standard of clothing so that it doesn't turn into a triple X rated.
To be a family-friendly platform. Yeah.
So it doesn't turn into a sexual content forward kind of platform. However, they had an allowance for contextually appropriate clothing, which people very quickly figured out meant that if you put an inflatable hot tub in your living room and then pointed a camera at it, you're allowed to wear pretty much whatever you want, because bikinis these days can go down quite a lot. And obviously this became a huge category. Basically, he fully took over the platform. Now, since then, a number of things happened. Number one, Twitch came out and disabled ads on, I believe, Amaranth is the channel. She was kind of like the real picture, the face of the hot tub streamer movement. I believe it's Amaranth. I hope I'm not.
And we really, like in that last podcast, which you can go back on, we kind of examined what the implications of this was, both for Twitch, for advertisers, for the creator scene in general, and the pros and cons that came with this. So she was demonetized.
And I think this is always probably what was going to happen, because I think this kind of actually very largely solves the problem. It allows them to say, look, we have to have an allowance for people to be able to stream themselves at the beach. And obviously, if you're at the beach, you're not going to be wearing full clothes. So like, it's very, very hard for them to put a policy in place that is clear and distinct that means that they could ever get rid of that type of content. So I think it sounds like the rule they're going to go with is that, and I don't know if they're going to be applying this across all channels that do this, but that they simply just won't be showing ads on channels where you're dressed less than in full clothes. So I think to help enforce that, they've now created a pools, beaches, and hot tubs category, because I love that they had to specifically like note hot tubs in there, which is like a new category you can stream in on Twitch. And while I don't believe this is confirmed by Twitch officially yet, I do believe that if you do stream in that category, you will either not be getting ads or you will only be getting advertisers who are paying a reduced rate to put ads on that category.
And what do you think that does to like the front page of Twitch or most watched? Because that was something that we spoke about where you log on to Twitch and you're just overwhelmed with hot tub streamers.
Yeah, I mean, it now allows Twitch basically, I think, to handle that area of content a lot better. So now they can A, give advertisers a lot more assurance, because advertisers might have been coming saying, hey, mm-hmm. we're not going to buy ads on your platform because we're buying ads generally and we don't want them to randomly end up on these streams.
Right. So
now they can say, okay, we just won't put them on this category, which mm-hmm. is the category of concern. On top of that, it means when it comes to like suggested streams and what streams they're promoting and making the face of the website, they can also now say, yeah, if it's in that category, we're probably not going to have that as like our best foot forward when someone walks through the door.
So as far as how you thought Twitch was going to handle this, how you thought they could handle it, what do you think about the outcome that they've come to? Do you think it's a good outcome? Do you think they've like hit the nail on the head in terms of how they've approached it? Or do you think there's still going to be issues?
I think this was the only outcome that could ever have happened. I'm just amazed it took them this long, because effectively, like we mentioned before, you cannot create rules that really outlaw the wearing of a bikini without being overly prohibitive on what kind of content you could ever have on the website. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you know, if you're like walking, even if you're clothed and you're walking along a beach and someone's in a bikini, are you in trouble then? It just becomes too hard.
Impractical.
It's impractical. But at the same time, they couldn't have this be a kind of content that's mixed in with everything else. Otherwise, advertisers are going to walk away because they don't feel like their ads are safe, just like what happened with the YouTube adpocalypse. And that's bad for the whole website. It's bad for Twitch, and it's bad for every individual creator who isn't a hot tub streamer. Mm. So by targeting that specifically, they're effectively just doing what YouTube does. YouTube obviously doesn't need the category quite as much, because YouTube has the most god tier AI systems that I will never understand, that seem to just be able to instantly detect what is happening, what is being said, what is being viewed, and they can automatically kind of run it all. But it's effectively what YouTube does. YouTube says, hey, there's content in this video that we don't think our advertisers are going to like. Therefore, we're not going to put ads on it. You can still have it on the website as yep. long as it's not literally XXX, but we're just not going to advertise on it.
Yep.
It gives the advertisers safety, allows them to be kind of a bit more flexible with what content they allow without threatening the whole ecosystem. So yeah, I think it was kind of always going to go here. I'm surprised. I'm actually a bit disappointed in myself. I didn't logically kind of say that this was going to happen last week, because literally, like we're saying, there was no other way it could have gone. It could never have outlawed bikinis. It just physically doesn't work, and they couldn't have not addressed it. Not that I think they care as much about the community backlash. They would care about the advertiser backlash.
I'm surprised as well that you didn't just clearly mention what you now think is the only outcome. It's very out of character for you,
Ellie. Yeah,
you're
I know.
Usually right on everything.
I know. I'm never wrong. Not once.
I think although this feels like an obvious outcome, and I think it is the right one, I'm impressed, I have to say, with Twitch. And maybe it's because my bar for the way that they've like handled scandals or issues in the past is low.
Normally my response to Twitch has been, we set the bar low and you guys managed to get a shovel.
In the past, the way that Twitch has dealt with community guideline issues has not been good. And I don't think my opinion is unique there. I think most people would say the way they've handled a lot of different issues in the past, from issues around sexual content, around unsafe content, content concerning animal cruelty, content concerning, I would say, even like when Ninja originally left the platform to go to Mixer,
and how they handled that.
I think they've, in the past, it's felt overly emotional, and it's felt
very unprofessional.
It's felt chaotic. Honestly, in some ways, kind of bizarre. Like someone was just like knee-jerk reaction. This is how we're doing it, and it was wrong, and it was not considered. It wasn't long-term practical. Anyway, I do think this is the right outcome. I think this is a balanced outcome. It feels measured. It feels like it's taken into consideration all the major players on the platform, being the platform itself, the creators, the advertisers, and the viewers. So I think I'm impressed.
I got to say, as much as I think the outcome I'm impressed by, that Twitch ended up getting somewhere that is vaguely logical, you know, very out of character for Twitch actually managing to do something that makes sense. At the end of the day, it took them 2 months.
It took them two months
to come to this after huge amounts of backlash. And what I'm guessing really only ever pushed it over the line was advertisers probably starting to actually ring up, because it was getting so much attention and saying, hey, do we need to pull ad spend? And they were like, hoy, give us 24 hours and we're going to have a great solution for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's been the response from the community?
I think largely good. Yeah. I think people are very much.
What about the response from the hot tub streamers?
I think the main criticism, I think anyone who is, you know, logical, and obviously it's very easy to get emotional, but I think even hot tub streamers understand that they have to be put in a different ad category or the whole website doesn't work. Like if you're getting angry, ultimately not good
for them either.
If you're getting angry at Twitch doing that, well, I'm sorry, but you just don't understand the reality of how the industry works. And then I think from the community standpoint, I think XQC put it quite well, which was as much as it sucks having creators have ads taken off their channel, it's literally like Jesus on the cross. Like they died for our sins, you know, like that's literally it. He was like, he tweeted something like that. It was kind of like, they need to die so that our ads remain. Like that is actually a good way
of putting
it.
Someone needed to take the fall.
Someone needed to take the fall and someone needed to take the hit. And realistically, the people who take the hit should be the people who created the problem,
which is
kind of the case.
Yeah. And to recap on that briefly for what we're saying is that basically for advertisers, yeah, they need to feel safe that they're putting their ads on content that works.
Otherwise, they just simply
they
won't advertise.
They will pull ad spend from the whole platform, which isn't good for anyone. No.
And I mean, but to go back to the point of Twitch not being good at dealing with issues normally, even though they ended up getting to a decent point with this on the way there, they actually pulled ads from a huge number of channels, including Amaranth, who was the main hot tub streamer, just didn't tell them, just demonetized them and was just like, oh.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Like, they'll figure it out eventually. Yeah, so quite awkward, actually.
Speaking of demonetization, did you see that James Charles's channel has also been added to the YouTube demonetized list?
I didn't.
Full channel demonetized. After yet another scandal that he's had with talking to underage.
Another one?
It's a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay, that one. I thought you meant there was another one. I was like, my God, man.
He's been largely offline for the last few weeks. He really hasn't said anything or uploaded any kind of content. He's doing the classic PR move of take a break, but his whole channel has been demonetized.
I really feel like there is now a very identifiable trend between people who become the darlings of YouTube. Like literally YouTube would use him as like the face of the platform.
Oh yeah.
Same with like PewDiePie back in the day and so many other creators, Shane Dawson David Dobrik. Oh my God. And it's like all these creators, it's just like YouTube's come out. They're like, oh, far out. All right. Yep. No. Friendship ended with insert person who was once popular here.
Yeah.
Like they go, yeah, pretty.
I think there's definitely an interesting discussion to be had around when YouTube steps in. I mean, to demonetize a whole channel is an action from YouTube. And I think it's a very bold action and it's one that they haven't done a huge amount in the past. And I think it's really interesting. I would love to know more. I think there's like a lot that we don't know, but like who's making that call? What kind of channels are on that list? Are they channels that only have a certain audience size where their public profile is such that it could potentially have an adpocalypse? I don't know. Do you have any initial thoughts?
So it's actually
I think we could do a whole episode on this.
It's super interesting, actually. And keep in mind here, I'm actually quite indifferent. Not indifferent, but I'm just not informed enough, nor is it an area of YouTube in terms of being referencing like the beauty vlogger area that I actually care enough about that I've looked into it. So I'm not really invested on whether or not I think James is guilty or innocent or any of that kind of thing. This is just very much coming from a emotionless content perspective. I mean, do very much believe in innocent until proven guilty, but I also wonder, and actually I can see two arguments here, but I am very against demonetizing without purpose, because I think that's always been a really big issue on YouTube and basically all online content platforms. If YouTube's going to demonetize a video, let alone an entire channel, I think they need a directly citable reason as to why the content on this channel is so non-ad friendly.
Yeah.
That your entire, because with James Giles, obviously he's made enough money, he's got enough stuff going on, he's going to be fine, he's eating at the end of the day. But for a lot of creators out there, this is their job, this is their livelihood.
Yeah.
And basically, kind of like your boss coming up to you and just being, hey, just not going to pay you for a bit. Like, keep coming to work, we're just not going to pay you. Like, that is a decision that needs reasoning and logic behind it. And if they've just gone, oh, James Charles got a couple of like dicey kind of accusations around right now that he has refuted from my understanding, but there's some dicey accusations. It's a bit like, oh, like demonetize the whole channel. For me, I don't know if I fully agree. The counter argument to that, just quickly, because I do want to balance myself, is advertisers coming and saying, hey, we don't want our ads associated with someone to whom we think is a controversial enough figure that it could negatively impact our brand's perception. At which point, that's a much bigger conversation.
And to be fair, while the example that you give of having your boss come up to you and be like, hey, we're just not paying you, in some ways that does happen on professional sports teams, on high profile roles. If someone has been accused of something that's bad or is alleged to have potentially done something, that person can be stood down or at least paused in their employment while it's come to a conclusion.
My understanding is that is almost always paid leave. Like, you'll be put on leave, but your salary, like, they might be like, we don't want you to do stuff here anymore, but they still pay you.
Yeah.
My understanding of most of those situations is you're just on administrative leave.
Yeah.
And your salary is still coming in. And so, for
very
me,
interesting.
It's super interesting.
Because it's one of those things where, and it's kind of like a catch 22. It's like the opposite of the Twitch situation where you feel as though, what is the guideline? Like, what is that bar that you need to, that box that is ticked where it's like, no, you are not suitable. Your whole channel is not suitable for monetization. And who's ticking it? And what actually is the criteria? Is there criteria? Because at the moment, from an external perspective, it does feel, although it's obvious that he's going through a real public backlash at the moment, what actually is quantifiable in that means you're demonetized? And who's responsible for implementing it? Does the creator know why or what
decision.
They've done? And at what point is that remonetized again? It feels like there's a lot of discretion in there somewhere.
And also sets a bit of a dangerous precedent of if you are, and once again, I'm not trying to downplay any of the accusations and screenshots that have come out, because I know there is like a level of evidence, and James Charles refuting it by saying he was lied to in messages that have since been deleted. That's my basic understanding of the situation. I think a pretty big principle of society is innocent until proven guilty. But also, if the precedent that YouTube is setting is, hey, if someone has accusations come out against them, we'll demonetize their channel. That is kind of scary. Similar to what we were talking about with that BitClout coin, the other, if people know,
super interesting.
And with the BitClout one, that was the concept of shorting a creator and then profiting from their downfall and creating false things to try and get them canceled. But if you have a creator and you think whether or not just for fun, there are trolls on the internet, or whether because you actually have something out against them. And if you know that all you need is some half decent screenshots that could be photoshopped, and you know, and basically just throw that out there, and YouTube will be like, oh yeah, we'll demonetize it. That's a dangerous precedent to have set. Once
and you
again,
look at the precedent of channels that YouTube has demonetized in the past, and I was just double checking there, but obviously, you know, what we spoke about almost a year ago now with Shane Dawson, whose channel was completely demonetized again, like another real almost golden boy of YouTube and one of the absolute OGs, like an iconic name on the platform, who had a public fallout 10 months ago and was fully demonetized, and he hasn't uploaded on his channel in 10 months.
Nope.
10 months.
Crazy.
Wild. I wonder what he's doing right now.
Mm.
And I wonder what his plan is. I mean, he was also at a different point in his career.
He made enough money from the honey sponsorships
maybe.
That he doesn't have to care.
Yeah. And maybe. And he was at a different point in his career and he had made enough money, and maybe he feels as though, you know what, I'm done. I don't need to go back to that. It's not worth the public perception. James is like, what, 21? He's so young. And he was not yet peaking, I think. He was still on a very upwards trajectory, and he's so young. He's so young. He's like, think about most 21-year-olds. You haven't even started your first full-time job yet. I think James will come back.
Yeah, I think he will come back. I think he'll definitely come back. I think.
Damn, it's tough as well. Like, it's hard. Like, far out to have that kind of audience and have your learnings and development. And I'm not making any excuses for anyone. Absolutely not. And I think James, while he is very young, he's had a quick exposure and he knows what's right and wrong. And I think he probably would recognize he made some mistakes. But I still feel for young people that are growing up in a large spotlight, you know,
there are
huge perks and there are also challenges.
And I think, I don't think most people are honest with themselves. And once again, not downplaying the mistakes that he's made at all, because I think if true, they are pretty damn serious. But I think a lot of people make mistakes. And I think when they're in their teenagers, early 20s, but the good thing is most of them, you just kind of get to forget and move on from, and they kind of.
Yeah, and you didn't have 20 million people watching them.
Yeah, and you can learn from them versus and kind of be like, okay, that was a mistake I made and I'm going to now become a better person. But I think when it happens in full view of the internet, a lot of the time you are not allowed to move on and kind of go forward. But anyway.
And I think absolutely, just to reiterate, not making any excuses for anything, and I fully believe that he has made some major mistakes, but I think we're just recognizing that, like, in addition to all of that, growing up in such a spotlight in that kind of world where people are looking for you to fail does come with challenges, like, regardless.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't even know we were doing that topic today. What a great one you just threw in. Dude, that was out of nowhere.
Spontaneity is my middle name.
Alrighty. Well, the last topic I think we were going to chat about today, which I don't know. I feel like this could end up being like a bit of a longer one, or it could be a super short one, because it's so kind of new and confusing to me that I don't even really know where to go with it. But it's the idea of digital/AI influencers.
Yeah.
So this is something that I literally didn't know existed until, I guess, basically started today. I think the biggest one goes by the name of Lil Michaela. And basically all these are is 3D kind of animated people and faces that are influencers.
They're influencers, but so they're not real people. They're robots.
Yeah, I believe the practicality of how this is done, it's created by a company. That company has about 20 employees, and I believe they have 3 digital creators, Michaela being the biggest. And they will go out, they have a model who is the body, and they do photo shoots in real life. Then they CGI the face of the person onto those photos. And initially, I believe, started as an Instagram page, now has a TikTok and also a YouTube. If you're wondering, like, oh, that sounds like a fun little gimmick, no. Apparently, she makes like $10 million a year. $10 million a year, which blows my mind, but that is apparently how successful this kind of thing is, which is so interesting for me.
Yeah. What are your first impressions? Like, is this, if someone told you about this and you didn't know the numbers behind it, what would you say? Would you be like, yeah, that could be massive?
If someone came to me and it was the first ever person to do it, I think I would say I can see the merits in exploring that because of the gimmick of being the first/only/biggest AI digital fake influencer. But my understanding, and I feel like we've talked about this a lot before, my understanding of the rise of influencers and becoming bigger and becoming like the majority of the way people consume content is this desire to have a more like personal connection with an individual. You know, it's the idea that you don't want to see these fully scripted things happening on TV, and you do want to kind of be there for like the mess ups and the good times and the like whatever like dumb stuff that influencer that you're following is going through and getting up to. At the core of all that is very much that real, and even though, you know, obviously influencers can be a bit fake sometimes, but at the end of the day, it is that more real, genuine, human thing that is the big draw card for a lot of people following influencers. And I don't understand, because this is someone who is very much not, in the most literal sense, not a real person, but also very, very scripted and is put together by a team of multiple people, and ultimately has a company behind it whose sole objective on that project is profit. It was started as obviously a profit making enterprise, and that's what it is. I find it really weird.
Yeah. I agree. I have to say I agree. And I've known about this for a little while now, and I feel like, you know, I hear a lot of kind of interesting pitches in my job about like new opportunities and that sort of thing. So I feel like I first heard about this like a year ago, and I've looked up this virtual creator before and a couple others, and I've sort of had the same feeling. Like, I think like one of the things people love about following creators or influencers, whatever you want to call them, is the fact that there's this realness to it. And there's this like element of like, that could be me, or it could be one of my friends, or it could be my group of friends. And like, it's kind of that, but elevated, or there's extra drama and whatever. And like, you know, I think an interesting example is like, you look at like all the TikTok creator drama that's going on, and like these hype houses and the relationships and the breakups, and like,
and you know that that's
real.
It is a
reality TV show.
Yeah.
And you know it's like a reality TV show, except it's fully raw because, well, now some of them are literally getting reality TV shows. But like before that, you're seeing it all play out in real time. Like, they're making TikToks on it. They're on Instagram stories. They're like talking to the paparazzi about it. They're going on podcasts and talking about the fact that like, yes, my boyfriend like cheated on me last week. And like, this is what he texted me this morning. And it's like so real time. And it's such a almost, I don't know what the word for it is. It's not like
obscene.
It's like kind of voyeuristic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's very.
Yeah.
Real.
Yeah. That's the appeal. And like, knowing that it's real is like, when you sell them a product, it comes like that, that human connection means something.
And I was doing some research on Michaela and her account. Obviously, you've got the ones on Instagram. This is the one where I'll kind of let it slide, find it a bit interesting, which is, you know, they're just photos of her on Instagram posing places, obviously with a real world model that then has the face imposed onto it. I can kind of understand that because the posts are still aesthetic. The posts still have this like, you know, really interesting clothing or style and all that kind of stuff behind it. So I can understand there it's less about the personality and more just about the aesthetic and the look. Where I found it super interesting is when I went onto the TikTok, because on the TikTok, it's got, don't get me wrong, like the classic memes, like reacting to sound bites and that kind of thing, which I can kind of get. But then it was things literally like part one, part two of like story time, being like, all right, so true story. I went to the supermarket the other week and like I ran into this guy, and I'd been chatting to this guy on this dating app for like 3 months now, and he was so hot. And I'm just like, I know you're an AI.
It's not a true story.
This is scripted. You have true story on this. It is not a true story. And you're not trying to hide the fact that you're an AI. So obviously this isn't a true story. And this isn't like one of those VTubers where it's just a real person who is using this as a mask. No. It's very much like this is an AI that is scripted. Yeah. So you know that this isn't real. You know it's not a true story. There'll be even like posts like, oh, just wondering, Michaela, like, do you have a heart? And be like, no, I don't have a heart, but I do feel and see, and I have emotions just like everyone else. And you're just like, haha, cool. But you wrote that on a script with 8 people that you went through and talked about what you should respond to this point. So no.
Like, I think it's fascinating.
I find it so interesting.
I find it fascinating because it's like these people are trying to construct what are the bits that make people connect to someone, and can we redo that?
It actually doesn't even come across as genuine in the sense of like, I know it's scripted, but wow, this comes across well. The scripting and the memes and everything, oh my God, you can tell so much. They are like, how do we make this appeal most to like 14 to 17 year old people? Because she'll open up and be like, well, y'all, I was like, y'all like going down to the shops, y'all. And like, so, you know, when like you see an adult painfully attempting to speak millennial?
Yeah.
It's that, but like aggressive. And I'm just like, oh my God, you're throwing in so many millennial tropes here. Like, it's actually overwhelming me. It doesn't feel real. But here's the thing. And I always find these so interesting. It's so interesting to me when I have things where I'm like, this is dumb. This shouldn't work. This is silly. And even though with NFTs, tap on wood, they could still come back. We were kind of right about that being more of a phase than a long-term thing, which it, at least in the months after, has semi-proven to be, at least at the level it was at. This is one where I don't know. I find it like, you know, so we're talking to-
She's got real engagement.
She's got real followers. You've got
she's doing real brand deals.
She's literally on, she's doing a brand deal that's a collaboration brand deal that Samsung's running, where she is alongside Ninja and a bunch of other like real life influencers.
Oh,
I find it so interesting. And I think that I've, you know, I was chatting to some people before the podcast about this topic, and there's this whole notion that like, oh, but you know, like, are you going to have these studios that like build up these IPs behind these like virtual influencers who then like movie studios would come and pay this character to be an actor in their movie that is a CG character. And I'm just like, I don't think so, but like, I don't think so.
Yeah, also, I mean, but there's some know. Like major pros. There's some major pros I can imagine from the perspective of like running a talent management agency and like working with a lot of brands.
Talent to having exactly a talent what you want when that, you want it.
Yeah. To having a talent that, you know, I don't mean to sound like whatever, like is literally within your control.
Yeah.
Like they're not going to go rogue and say something totally unbrand safe. Like
what's that, Michaela?
There's no risk of that.
You do want to do this brand deal. Oh, great. Oh, wow. You didn't have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, they're not going to go off. They're not going to like do a David Dobrik or a James Charles and do something really inappropriate that means brands have to like worry about their own brand safety and campaigns and all that. They're going to be consistent. They're not going to deliver briefs late, I'm sure. They're going to be on time. They're going to be able to give you exactly the messaging that brands want.
Yep.
And you have the ability to control the IP, which is something that in the talent business is really, really rare and quite difficult to achieve. So I see all those benefits. At the same time, I also see some of the best things that come with working with creators is that they're not going to exactly follow a script. And they have this like unique connection with their audience, and they're able to talk about something in a way that you can't script up. Mm. And can that be achieved in AI? I don't know. Very cool.
It's very interesting. The future is a scary place. I would be very interested to know, to everyone listening, if you would like to leave a comment down below about what you think about the whole topic of AI influencers, because maybe I'm just a skeptic. Maybe I'm crazy.
Sometimes it's like this kind of stuff that happens. I'm like, am I too old?
Am I the grandfather with the Nokia who doesn't want to change over to his iPhone?
Yeah,
literally. But I guess we'll find out when we read the comments.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Watch Time. We will see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.